Welcome everyone to Know Their Brand podcast, a podcast designed to champion and support gender inclusion in business. Welcome everyone. I'm Giulia, your host, a social entrepreneur dedicated to helping women in business. Join me and my fantastic guest to find out more about gender inclusion and to be inspired by their incredible stories.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to our podcast. Today with us, we have Kristen Anderson. Kristen is the vice chair of the European Women on Board, a non-profit based in Brussels, in Belgium, that focuses on gender equality in the decision-making. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you, Giulia. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate that you invited me to speak with you today.
Oh, I'm really, really happy you accepted my invitation because I heard you speaking before. I know you have a very interesting background professionally and personally as well. You live in one of the most beautiful country in the world. I have to be Mike.
Which one is that one?
Italy! But jokes aside, you have very, very, very interesting professional background and your experience of being a woman in a field that is largely male dominated, I think will really inspire our audience. So can I ask you to start from your background? Who are you? What you do?
Definitely. So probably people that are listening can tell that I'm not Italian. I'm American. I grew up in the U.S. Of Swedish background. That's the Anderson. I actually grew up in a small town in New Mexico. Maybe people haven't heard of New Mexico, but it's a beautiful state where the Rocky Mountains meet the desert. And I grew up in a town called Los Alamos, which is where there's a laboratory, and it was created to develop the atomic bomb. So it's a very scientific community. It's still not doing work on bombs, doing work on very interesting geothermal power, et cetera. But I grew up there in this small scientific-oriented town, and my father is a scientist, and my mother is a language teacher. So I always had this kind of science background in my mind. I loved math, I loved chemistry. And so I always planned to go to college and study sciences to be a STEM person. And my family all encouraged that. And so I did my university bachelor's and master's in chemical engineering. And so at the time, I mean, this is way back, it's not 10 years ago, there were quite a few women in STEM. And I think there was probably 40% women in my chemical engineering classes and graduated. And I never felt that there was any difference, for being a STEM woman versus a man. And then I started working. I chose to go into the food industry because I really liked the idea of actually being able to eat what I developed at the end, instead of working in the, petrochemical industry or the chemical industry. And so I worked in the U.S. in Chicago for many years for Kraft Foods. And then really my husband and I wanted to go overseas and work overseas. And we left in 99 and lived in Australia for 3 years working for Kraft. I was running their R&D. My husband was working in supply chain, and then moved to Munich for 5 years with Kraft. And again, working in R&D roles. And really liked the idea of other languages and cultures. For those of you who know the food industry, there was a lot of mergers and acquisitions.
Yes,
and
I remember actually.
Splitting. And at the point, Kraft said, it's time, Kristen, to come back to the U.S. And we had decided many years ago that we didn't want to go back for work. Wanted to go back to visit family, but not for work. So left Kraft and went to work in Coca-Cola in China and Shanghai. So for 3 years, we were building their R&D center, not physically, but building capacity, competence, and designing it and the pilot plan. So it was a really fantastic experience. But it was far away from where we were interested in kind of settling. So we wanted to come back to Europe. And that's how I ended up in this small town called Parma in the Food Valley in Italy, where I am now. Because Barilla had an opening for, again, an R&D leader, and I joined Barilla, the Italian-owned food company, back 10 years ago, and was an R&D leader of their part of their research group. And what happened is Barilla started working on their diversity and inclusion journey in 2013, and they formed an internal committee and a board. And maybe because I lived around the world and had a different perspective, they asked me to be on the committee. So I did that as a double hat. I was still leading R&D and I spent a year with Barilla in Singapore. But then after some years, the CEO asked me to take on the role of chief diversity officer working for him, which is a rotating role in Barilla. And I did that for 5 years, for more than, it's a 3-year role, but because the COVID, he asked me to stay longer. And then at the end of my turn as chief diversity officer, I decided to kind of retire from Barilla to move in the space of, and stay in the space of D&I. And now I'm, as you said, the vice chair of European Women on Boards, which is a nonprofit, which sole objective is to have more gender diversity at all levels of decision-making. So we're an organization that has individual members, we have member associations, we have corporate partners. And today is a very big day because it's the third of the discussions on the new gender board directive to have gender equal boards, which is up for a vote in parliament. And cross fingers, it goes well, because that's something that's been 10 years in the discussion.
Wow. Okay.
EWAB supports that. And that's part of our role.
And in which parliament, sorry?
Yeah, the European Union. Exactly. So it would become, if it does pass, the official directive is that across publicly traded companies in Europe need to have 40% women on their board. So we have gender equal decision making at the board level. It doesn't happen tomorrow, but it's over time. You need to make progress.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people, obviously for work I talk with, you have split opinions about quotas and should we really have numbers to give equality. And my take, which if I remember correctly, something you and I share as well, is that if you don't have numbers, you don't have anything to actually look towards to. Like you can always say, yeah, we will improve a little bit. Well, if you have a goal to, you know, in front of you, you need to necessarily work towards it. It's not just a good to have, it becomes, you know, an effort, really a great effort to get there. And apart from quotes or not, I think that if you have a goal like this, if you are a clever organization, you're going to do everything you can to make sure that the best people get on the board. And if this of 40% are women, you're going to give the best chances to women to grow in your organization. I think that the end result is that.
Exactly, Julia. I mean, and all the research, and we know that, I think the audience knows that gender diverse teams and diverse teams in general perform better. Okay. Yeah. So you don't get into groupthink. And some people say, well, I don't believe in quotas because that means that we're taking unqualified women and putting them on boards. That's not what a quota means. I mean, we achieve what we measure, just like a business project. You don't say, I'm going to start up this factory and you have no KPIs. It's the same thing, you know, and what's been shown by the gender diversity index, the research that EWAB does, is that the countries that have put targets, KPIs, like France, have achieved more gender equality in boards. The countries that left it kind of voluntary have not moved in 10 years. So again, European Women on Boards, we have a talent pool of over 300 women who are ready for C-suite and board positions. This is our role, is to help them get ready and to help to show that there are women ready. And our goal is to become 1,000 member talent pool. So when you say there's not board ready women, that's not true. Now in some functions, and you and I talked a lot about STEM, in some functions there are fewer women, and that's another challenge. But you know, our goal is to put this pool here so that we can help women to achieve those roles and help organizations who want to find those women.
Exactly, to find them, because that's the pushback you always have. And when you say, you know, we're going to take unqualified women, well, if you, not you as a Christian, but you as an organization want to take unqualified people, it means that you really haven't built a company that can provide you that kind of qualified women. And so the problem is even more urgent, really, because, you know, it's quotas. For me, I was against when I was young because I didn't know actually what I was like. I can go, I can do whatever I want. Then you discover that there are barriers, and for a company to take an active position in taking these barriers down, if it has to be quotas, it has to be quotas. Because as you say, otherwise in 10 years you don't see any improvement. Exactly. And I know I'm going to upset people with that. Sorry, I need to. So I know some people in the audience won't like this, but this is personally what I believe. And and not alone. Hopefully the European Parliament agrees with us.
And I asked, you know, the audience to Google, you know, European Women on Boards Gender Diversity Index, because in January we launched our 2020 report and had a nice event that we discussed this exact topic. Ursula von der Leyen gave a keynote speech talking about the progress that some countries have made and some companies have made and the lack of progress elsewhere. So again, this is, I tell people, quotas, just think of a quote as a KPI. Why wouldn't you try to make progress? And if you don't measure that you're making progress, it's like any business project. There won't be progress just because we think it's a nice idea to do it.
I'm totally going to use this. Like, think about it as a KPI. I'm going to, because that's what it is effectively. Mm-hmm. It's not imposing to put random people into, you know, organization on the board of the organization. It's to creating a system that allows you to have a gender diverse board.
And Julia, you and I don't, there's no woman out there that wants to have an unqualified woman put on a board for any kind of KPI or any reason. And so the argument is that we want qualified women. The argument that there aren't qualified women is I think the point that we're talking about today. There are qualified women. EWAB has a pool of qualified women. We are training women to have those skills, and that's the role that we play. So it might take a bit longer, and that's what we'll talk about in STEM. So if you want someone with a certain background, it might take a bit longer, but you can find them. You can find them. They're there.
Absolutely. And this is you will see in many podcasts, other people, even people working in recruitment, say the same. It just might take a little longer, but you find the talent. Just invest the time in that. But so if you go back of your experience as a woman in STEM, I remember you sharing a horrifying story of how you had been asked to do an extra test, an interview. I'd like to talk about it, but if you can touch on that one, I really like for my audience to hear that. So how is it to be a woman in STEM?
Well, I told the audience a bit of the background. I mean, I didn't think it was any different to be a woman in STEM versus a man in STEM until I started going out into the working world and I was applying for roles after I got my master's degree in chemical engineering. And I remember these were big multinationals. I was in the US. And I remember the story I shared with you before, Julia, is that I went to an interview, you know, for a big multinational, and you go on site and, you know, they have a schedule of interviews with different people. And I remember afterwards I was talking to the person that was my host. And I was saying that interview with that gentleman was very difficult, you know, because he gave me that quiz and, you know, I did well, but I was not really expecting it. And my host was like, "What quiz?" And he had been hired a year before. Mm-hmm. And he interviewed with that same person. And he also knew other people were interviewing that person. And that gentleman, that engineer, didn't give anyone else a quiz, only me, because I was a woman candidate. So I quickly learned that that there was some, you know, different ways that they were evaluating me. And I don't think it was the company. I don't think the company knew that, because when they offered me a job, and they did offer me a job, I declined and I told them why. And they were shocked.
Oh, okay.
Which is also a thing, is make sure you you're sure who you're putting on your interview schedule, you know, that people are not biased and doing this kind of thing. Because for me, it stuck always in my mind that that organization wasn't very, you know, maybe they're not biased as an organization, but there's definitely, you'll find that there's this view from some men that women can't do, you know, engineering, or women can't be good at IT or at programming. And you see that even recently with Google. You know, you saw the manifesto of one of the employees saying that women are less competent in programming. So I think there's a lot of bias that goes through everything we're doing, you know, whether it's you know, recruiting, interviewing, promoting. And then when I started my work at Kraft, I was the only female engineer working in an area, the dairy industry, and the cheese area was very masculine. And so I learned quickly that I would have to say my ideas a couple times. Sometimes another male engineer would have to repeat my idea, and then they would listen to the male engineer. So it was like, I think I said that a few minutes ago. And there's, you know, over time and experience, you learn that you have to, unfortunately, try to keep pushing and try to overcome the fact that people sometimes don't listen to women in certain areas and talk over women or interrupt women. That happens quite often in companies. And it's just a part of the gender bias that we have to also make men aware of, that it exists.
Absolutely. So you will say, like, we hear that actually a lot, like the women being interrupted, women not to be listened to. There is an interesting book, The Authority Gap, from Barry Ann Siegert, that speaks exactly about that. And how we kind of have to prove ourselves on and on again. And that means that we waste a lot of time. As a the company wastes a lot of time because we have to waste our time in trying to be listen to. So it really doesn't make any business sense. And yet, especially in sectors like, you know, STEM, women really still struggle to be taken in serious. And actually, and I don't know, tell me if this is my perception, but I don't work in STEM, so I might be wrong. I think that maybe a few years ago, maybe, you know, in the early 20s, 90s, early 20s, things were going better. But I think we're actually going worse in the last year, in the last few years. It's like, we went back to more traditional, like in the 50s, American movies, kind of gender, you know, yeah, the woman is more at home and less, you know, involved in, yeah, technology or other, you know, things that are not, I always joke, marketing and HR, where we do it very well there. But the rest of the industry, they seem to actually going backwards. Is that something you have experienced or...
I think your audience could look at the data. And I was very shocked when I was talking to a colleague in America who is also STEM. And she was saying, do you know, Kristen, that from the time that we were in university, where I think the numbers were around 40% women engineers in general, maybe, you know, in some engineering more and some engineering less. And it's, I think it's less than half that now. And I think that there's this also battle during school of young girls, you know, who generally score better in math.
Yeah. But
then as they go through, there's the societal pressure that you're talking about, Julia, and there's the pressure from what you're supposed to do and what you're supposed to be. And maybe, you know, these young girls just decide, forget, you know, I'm already battling this. Why would I want to have this for the rest of my career? So it's not just a question of, you know, certain companies or certain individuals. There's a lot of societal pressure and other levers that I think are making women decide not to go into STEM functions, even though they're very good at math and science.
Yeah, we were talking with someone from the Luxembourg Tech School, Sarah, and she runs the programs, and she says that they're struggling to find girls that want to come, not because they're not interested, but because then there is the very, really much the peer pressure of from the, you know, their friends, but also from the families to say, is that really what you want to do growing up? Like, why don't you take a more traditional career? And which leaves us, you know, when I work in gender equality, there are so many angles I look at. Like, I need to work with companies, I need to work with individuals, but the society at large is also, you know, a big component of this inequality of opportunities. Like, the opportunity seems to be taken away from girls even before they can actually start making their decision about their career. What would be
To add on to what you said, Julie, that's why it's a difficult problem. You know, diversity is not just, you know, bringing someone different on a board. There's also inclusion. There's also, you know, as you're growing up, the societal pressure, there's also the gender differences and how women present themselves versus men. This is not just about women, you know, European women on boards, not about women complaining about our situation. That's not it. And it's not a coffee clutch. Sometimes people think it's just having coffee. No, it's actually women supporting women to understand that there are also gender differences that we have versus men and how we talk about ourselves and our skills that then can make us appear to be less ready also for bigger decision-making positions. So, you know, today's not about saying, you know, all men are not doing you know, the right thing for women. There's a lot of male allies out there. There's a lot of supporters and sponsors of women. But we, of course, need women also to realize that there are some ways we don't talk about ourselves in the most confident way.
Look, you open with someone that works on personal branding, particularly for women. And that's exactly what I do. It's like helping women to, you know, to, I always say, is to unpeeling your superpower. And then, because we all have it, because that's a fact. You just need to find out which one is yours. And then finding, like, optimizing the perception the people have of you and your superpower, and communicating in a way that really resonates to you. And that is a problem, because for women, there is, you know, if you become too assertive, you are bossy. If you're not assertive enough, you're not confident enough. We have to juggle a little bit. But I actually personally believe that when you find your superpower, it gives you that confidence that you can communicate it in a way that works for you without becoming, too assertive or too because you're, you know, it's not easy.
Oh, no, you're right. And there's a recent research that was completed with 20,000 performance reviews in the US, but I believe it's probably relevant to elsewhere. They went through 20,000 performance reviews and they tracked how many times there was comments in the performance review about a woman's assertiveness, lack of assertiveness, too quiet, speaks too much, you know, kind of this, the way that we present ourselves versus how many times it was noted for men. So what do you think the percentage was, Julia, for women? On what percentage of the time there was comments?
Well, I think I read it something, but it's pretty much all the time they would get
almost 70% of the time in 70% of those performance reviews, and for men, 1%.
Wow, I didn't know.
And again, and this, but the bosses, the managers of these people were not all men. They were men and women. So also women are making comments to other women. You're not speaking up enough. You're speaking up too much. So when I say that gender bias, it's not, again, it is not about, you know, it's all about men and men are biased. No, we all have biases. We know we all have biases. And that can also play out women evaluating women and making comments about women.
Absolutely. And even women employing women, you know, like sometimes organization just, they think that if they stick one woman within the hiring process, that will solve all the, you know, gender inclusion problems. But actually, it's not necessary. There is also a lot of, you know, sometimes women that have arrived to that level of seniority had to fight so hard that they've kind of forgot how things can be different. And now we don't need to fight all the time. We shouldn't be.
Exactly. And I think that that's one of the reasons I really love volunteering for Urine Pray Women on Boards, because it's a group of supportive women who are there to help other women. It's not competition. And we shouldn't be saying, because I had to fight my way to the top, other women should fight their way to the top, because then you're not a role model. I mean, how can you aspire to be on the C-suite if you don't see any women, or you see a few women who don't have any kind of leadership style like yours, that they've maybe adapted their leadership style to be more of the dominant style. Maybe it's the masculine style. And women leadership style can be much different, and it can be much positive that way, bringing positive elements that are different than masculine leadership style. Many times.
Absolutely. Which is the power of diversity. So, you know, we don't have to be all the same. We just need to bring ourselves with our differences to the table. And that's where the diversity does the magic. And so as managers, like I had managers that were that way, the very, you know, male managerial style. It didn't resonate with me. I never actually, you know, found my way with them because I didn't trust them. It was not my way. So I like the fact that you mentioned role models, like having different role models that can be more aligned with our values. And then we can say, okay, I want to be a manager.
Exactly.
Like that one. Not like that one. Like that one. Exactly. Okay, take a pick a bits of bobs of this one, actually. Mm-hmm. And also from my male managers and from this, what I like, and then create my own style without having to fall into predetermined managerial styles, if you want.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, we say that diversity without inclusion is a waste, because you can bring diverse people into your organization. You can have diversity on your boards, but if you don't listen to them, if you don't appreciate their different style, their different viewpoints, it's a waste to have diversity. And that's why some people bring in diversity and then they leave because they're not included.
Absolutely. And that happens, especially when I saw on my first hand, when sometimes boards, they include one woman. So they have, they tick the box of gender inclusion. By doing that, actually really the chance of this woman to be able to contribute and bring the real diversity to the company is very low, because like bringing one of anything, like it becomes like you are the only one that need to push a different agenda and nobody listens to you. And so diversity,
the
is
only one doesn't work. I mean, the only person of color, the only person of a different cultural background, you need 30%. But then sometimes people say, but you know, well, I have to start somewhere. Okay, start with the one, but have again a KPI that I'm going to get to 30%. I'm going to get to 40%. I'm going to work on it. Or just even 30% of people that are not the same culture as the rest of my board. If you have a board, it's all Italian men. So I'm going to have 30% that are women and also people from other cultures. There's ways to do it, but you got to set the KPI and have a commitment to really move.
Absolutely. And I remember that you mentioned something that I really, really stuck a chord with me. It was like, when, you know, when we think we are meritocratic, Meritocracy versus bureaucracy. So I like the fact you mentioned that, because sometimes we think that we are giving just the best job to the best person, right? Like, you know, you choose the best person for the job. That's our idea. But actually, that's not what we're doing. We just look for something. So if you can you explain, because it's the first time I actually, and you experience it, but when you said it, I was like, yeah, that's exactly the problem.
Well, I know I had once this conversation with a senior level chairman in a company, and he said, I don't believe in quotas, I believe in meritocracy, which I think we all believe in it. You know, I would love to say I only bring people in and promote them because of their merit, nothing else. The problem is that's a theory. It does not exist, because we all have biases. We all have them. We're not robots, you know, so we don't just evaluate everyone based on analytical criteria. And our biases are based on our experiences through life and are very heavily driven by emotion. And so the reason I say meritocracy is that we tend to have a bias that's very strong called affinity bias. So affinity bias, and that's why I say meritocracy, is when we like someone who reminds us of ourselves, because in generally, we like ourselves. And we don't even know, because a lot of these are many times unconscious bias. I don't know why I really relate well to Julia. Maybe you don't look like me. We're not in the same cultural background, but something in our conversation, you remind me of myself when I was younger, and I'm not even aware it's happening. So I really like to spend more time with you. Maybe I mentor you. I sponsor you when I'm talking about people. Julia's very good. And I don't realize that you're very much like me, maybe. And then we're basically a bit into the group think. Or I go to people and ask their opinions, and they're people that are like me. So I'm basically getting people who already think like me to basically say, Kristen, you're doing the right thing. Yeah, your decision was right. So to remove these type of biases, we need to surround ourselves with others that are different than us and ask opinion of others that aren't always going to say, yes, Kristen, you're right. And be aware that we have this affinity bias, which is the reason we're promoting someone or recommending someone for a project, spending more time with some people. You know, actually think about who's the last person I asked an opinion of. Who did I actually informally mentor? Who did I have coffee with? And you'll see a lot of times there's affinity bias. And the only way to get rid of a bias is to become aware of it and try to do some specific things to, you know, open ourselves up to not only those that are like us.
And so how would you go about that? So what can we do?
So be aware we all have affinity bias, and then say, you know, even just be very analytical, write it down. Who did I recommend for the project last time? And why was it? You know, if you see someone who having a affinity bias, ask questions that are curiosity questions. So if you're managed by Luca and Luca says, you know, Julia should be given this promotion, and I think there might be affinity bias, because it doesn't always happen. There's affinity bias just between women and women and men. Yeah. It could be something else. It's very it's hidden. I would ask an analytical question. So what does she do to deserve this promotion? Why do you say that? Or if someone's wants to hire Julia, she's a good fit for the company. A fit is not an analytical or objective word, but a lot of times people say fit.
Yeah.
So, you know, then I would say, what do you mean? What is it that she does that's a fit for the company? What exactly do you feel are the characteristics? So try to do the curiosity questions, because if you confront someone with a bias, then basically it's a defensive mechanism, because many times we've spent years developing these bias. So if I say to Luca, you have an affinity bias to Julia, that's why you want to promote her. He'll be, no, I do not.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's got to be curiosity. It's got to, you know, then if you're Luca and you think you might have a bias, ask someone, do you think that Julia is the, you know, ask someone who has a different opinion than you. Those are the things that can make you become aware that you have a bias. And that's the same for any bias, not just affinity bias. We also have now proximity bias is a new bias is coming very strong, Julia, which is a bias to people who are coming to the office with us. And some companies are doing kind of the work to see, are we actually recommending to promote people or to make them in our talent area because they've spent more time in the office? So actually tracking who spent more time in the office, and is it correlated with how we are biased towards them? Because, you know, that direct interaction can be a bias. If I see you only virtually, but I see, you know, Paolo in the office all the time, I might be giving him more informal coaching and mentoring. And it all is a kind of a circle that goes around and then leads to me giving Paolo the project. And then later he does well and Paolo gets promoted. And Julia, you're virtual and I just interact with you like this, but I have a proximity bias.
Actually, this is very interesting because we were having this conversation on this podcast a few weeks ago with Darren, who works in recruitment, and he was concerned about that. So the fact that now there is this flexi work or hybrid work, and I'm actually going to do an event, I think in October, about the new hybrid work, precisely for this, because so it's great. Women have been advocating for flexi work for forever, because especially with all of the extra duty care that we tend to take, which is there can be children or sick parents or dogs, cats, like it's for some reason they always seem to fall on our shoulder, mm-hmm. and all the mental load and all that. So women have been advocating for flexi work and part-time work and working from home a lot. Now we are in a time where flexi work is becoming a reality after the after COVID. But the risk is exactly what Darren was saying. I'm a bit afraid of it because women, we will more likely to take hybrid work than men because of this all this reason. But then they become invisible. Mm-hmm. And then they miss all of this opportunity. This just chit-chat you do in the office. This is like, you know, go and get a coffee and we chit-chat about something and an idea sparks. And then from there develops and the person gets promoted while the person is at home. Doesn't get that opportunity. So how do we balance the two things? Great to have a hybrid, but as you said, this proximity bias can really much kick into place. So are we going to do to make sure that promotions are given, you know, in opportunity are given equally to everybody?
So, yeah, and I think you have to be aware of it, like any bias, and then actually track it, try to be objective about it and say, look, if I'm a manager and I say, well, maybe I do have affinity bias or proximity bias for those who come into the office, and I'm actually having coffee every day with this group of whomever that comes to the office. Am I spending the equal amount of time of the people that are not so often in the office? And I'm going to write it down. Today I met for half an hour. This is the members of my team. And if I want to be non-biased, I'm going to should be spending the same amount of time per week with the people that are virtual. But it's unconscious. So we don't think that we're doing it and we don't track it. So we just kind of, unfortunately, it's kind of the self-fulfilling prophecy of people that are close, as you already explained, you know, sponsorship, mentorship, promotion, you know, and so I think that's the same thing with including people that are different than you. You spend more time with the people that are the same. And so then you just, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy that they do better in your mind versus the people that are different.
Actually, I have two things that spark me as you're talking about. One, I know a lot of people will push back and say, well, but if the people make the effort to come to work while you are conveniently from home, why should you be given the same opportunities? And for that, I have a stat that is very interesting. They did a study that women giving one extra hour work in the office per day to women and men. And they discovered that when women were given only one extra hour, of course, the women were, they had very severe consequences on their mental health, level of stress. They were really struggling with one only hour extra. The men, on the other hand, they were fine. Actually, they found out that they were a little less stressed if they were staying longer in the office. Okay, why is that? Women are not resilient? No, it's because women, when they finish work, they have all of those other things they need to do. So for them, 1 hour later means an hour delay in all the presses. And for men, it actually means I come back home, a food most likely is going to be ready. And actually, I was talking with someone, I was sharing this study with someone, and they said, oh, yeah, my colleague always says, you know, that he prefers to stay late because this way the kids are already in bed and, you know, you just enjoy meal when you come back home, goes back home. And I'm like, okay. So it's not that women choose to stay home because they are lazy. It's because it makes the family usually, you know, for everybody easier to manage. And the other thing you were mentioning was about we don't spend enough time with people that are different from us. And I don't know, this is something I just heard in a podcast. I'm just opening it to you. This person, which is actually a PhD in gender inclusion, and she's done a lot of studies on that. She believes that one way in which we could improve our awareness of other people and different backgrounds, because we don't spend enough time with them, is to actually read fictional books about them. So a fictional book about Black people, a fictional book about women, a fictional, because is a way to enter in that world without mm-hmm. having to, you know, like, I don't know, I find it very interesting. I was like, it's true. Like, it's, it might be a way, especially because men tend to read only books written by men. I don't know if you saw the research, but it's not very often that men read a book, to the point that they love to, a lot of time, female authors, they, you know, shorten their names.
Yeah, yeah. You cannot
pick up.
Exactly. So no, but I think two interesting points. If I take your first point, which is, you know, you hear people say, well, why shouldn't I reward people who make the extra effort to come to the office? My point to them is, do you want just people who can come to the office? Because is that really the people that are giving you the best ideas? Maybe they're coming to the office not to do the best work, but to make sure that they can socialize or link or network. And that's not bad. But, you know, you're making a criteria that's not objective. You're making a criteria based on those that can come to the office. You know, so you're kind of taking people who maybe have a disability, moving them out of your inner circle. The people
Absolutely.
That have they have caregiver responsibilities, they're ill, whatever it is, you're basically, it's a way that's reinforcing your affinity bias. You're coming to the office, so you like those who are also coming to the office. And in your mind, that's saying those people are like me, they have the same values. That's the problem with affinity bias. You're now taking away everyone else who has, you know, who has a good work, good ideas, but they don't have the same exact affinity to your office. The other thing is, why are people coming to the office? I mean, I know I wouldn't want to come to the office to sit behind my laptop and have global calls sitting in the office. Why wouldn't I do that at home? But if you're bringing people to the office, you're drawing them into the office to do networking and team building, then that's great. And then everyone comes and participates. So why should it be my presence and my proximity as the major factor to valuing me? So I think, you know, which leads into the point you were talking about, which inner circle, you know, I tell people when I'm doing some of these sessions, do an inner circle exercise. Basically write down who are your friends? Are they similar to you, similar background, education, language, et cetera, sexual orientation, ethnic background, gender, also your doctor, your closest colleagues at work, who you had lunch with at work last, who you relied on. If you think about that, you'll find they're very similar to you. Even if they don't look like you, they have a similar maybe background, education. Then try to consciously say, I should actually be expanding that in some way. Maybe I should be having a lunch with someone who I don't ever have lunch with, but I should know them better. One way that you were mentioning to do that without actually physically seeing someone is to read about someone or to watch a documentary about a different culture that you're not familiar with, is to try to put your brain some more positive elements of that group. So if you think, I have a bias against, let's say, refugees, maybe, because what we see about refugees is only the negative on the news. Because remember, news is not unbiased. They're showing things to draw. So if I know that, why don't I go meet someone? If I think that, you know, there's a certain bias, meet someone who's a refugee talking about their experience and they want a job. So we can change that. That's one of the ways to change to try to reduce and remove our biases, is to fill up with the other aspect that can be the more positive elements of a certain group of people or people of different backgrounds.
Yeah, the only problem with all of this is that people must want to do it. And that's, I think, where the struggle is, that you know, I don't have time. Why should I read about someone else? Why should I? And, you know, it seems always when I, you know, have this conversation with people, like, you know, what's in it for me? I can live my life perfectly, even if I have no idea of, you know, what happens to a refugee, what happens to a woman, what happens. And that, I think, is a societal change that really needs to happen. Mm-hmm. That we all benefit. We say it, you know, we technically know it, that, you know, diversity brings benefit to everybody, but I find that we are still very behind in that. Like, when I have conversation with people, I really find people, you know, a lot of people still struggle with seeing why they should invest their time in doing that.
But, you know, it's the same with, you know, with removing bias or getting more intercultural competence or being more inclusive. Your first thing is you have to say, why do I believe this is good for me? I mean, you can say it's good for your company, but why is it good for me? Because people do things for themselves. And hopefully people understand that if I'm more inclusive, I'm a better leader. Why are there always these inclusive leadership classes? Because it's actually shown to work. If you're more inclusive, if you listen more than tell, if you bring new ideas, you will be some more successful at work. So let's say I want to be more inclusive, but I don't know how. So first thing is interest. Then there's the self-awareness. I'm not inclusive because I have a bias. I don't surround myself with people that are different. So all of those tools, you know, become a male ally or an ally for people that are always talked over in meetings. For example, there's little tips like, you know, you said something and someone interrupted you. And I say, well, I don't think Julia was finished yet. Julia, please finish. There's small things that anyone can do. Or if Julia, you said an idea and no one paid attention. And, you know, 2 minutes later, another person says the idea. It could be, this could be a man or it could be someone more junior and or more senior. And everyone says, you know, oh, Kristen, that was a great idea. Someone else should say, well, Julia, maybe you should also add because you said that 2 minutes ago or 5 minutes ago. So there's, and that's soft. That's not making anyone embarrassed. That's not, you know, so little things every day, those little things to say against microaggressions can really make the world more inclusive. And then hopefully people understand that being a better leader, being a more inclusive leader will be good for me. And, you know, I will shine in the end because I'm more inclusive.
Absolutely. I love what you say. That is exactly what I preach. It's like, let's start from the small things. Great to have big programs in the companies. There should be big programs, but like in your experience, having just big programs, that doesn't mean the company is inclusive, because the manager that made you try to do the test at the beginning of your career clearly hadn't got the memo that to be a good manager is actually need to be inclusive. And so I think that it's a great point. Like, we need to start from the small things. That's big programs, yes, but
really both of them together.
Yeah, exactly. Embedding in the culture and explain the value. And if you think about it, if you are someone that, if I propose an idea, nobody listened to me, and then when someone else proposed it, you say, well, yeah, and it wasn't what you were saying, Julia. I love the idea. It's, you know, similar to what you were saying. Mm-hmm. You will have in me someone, you know, a loyal reportee, because I'll always look up at you and say, oh, that person actually paid attention to me. I will go the extra mile to demonstrate, you know, to support my manager and all of this. So honestly, I think it's going to work much better for everybody. Like,
yeah, exactly. And that's why we say, you know, diversity is a fact. You know, we are diverse, but inclusion is a choice. You can be inclusive or you can choose not to be. And maybe we're not consciously choosing not to be. And I don't go around saying I'm not going to be inclusive today. But the other side is, I really should say I'm going to be more inclusive today. And the little things I'm going to do, I'm going to be conscious about. And I'm going to try to see what my biases are, or ask my partner, my family members. They know your biases many times more than you know them yourself, because they're unconscious many times. And those are things you can do that will make you more inclusive. And again, will make they may make everything work better. The companies will be better, business results, and you'll be a better leader.
Okay, I'm looking at the time, and I really don't want to steal any more of your time, but there is one last question I really want to ask you. And if you have a word of advice, of encouragement, or something you'd like to say to a young woman today that is considering a career in STEM, what would be your advice?
No, I would say, you know, persevere. If this is what you want to do, you know that there's societal pressure, but persevere and find a role model who's another STEM woman, you know, that, like, for me, that you come to me or someone else and say, can you tell me how I can persevere and stay true to the fact that I want to be a STEM leader in the future? You know, don't give up, because we talked about the pressures, they're there, but you can get help from other women. You can get help from role models and mentors, and do that and persevere, and, you know, be true to yourself and be a STEM leader.
And actually, can I just say, it's not just for STEM, because STEM is one of these male dominating sectors, but I work in other sectors as well, where again, women are really severe underrepresented. And I think that advice will be very valuable to them as well.
It's not just for STEM, but persevere with your true, you know, true calling, what you want to do with your career. It's important to do what we like to do, what we're good at. And don't, you know, sometimes we lack self-confidence. You know, maybe everyone's right telling me I shouldn't go for this type of role. No, talk to others. Other people will tell you, Julia, no, you should apply for this. Julia, you should say you're ready for this. Because sometimes the studies show when women have 85% of the skills for a job, we will say we're not ready. When men have 40%, they'll say they're ready. So, and that's, again, not saying men are better than women, et cetera. It's just that there are gender differences there. So if you're a manager of a man and a woman, and your woman report says she's not ready, and your man says he is, understand there are differences there, and maybe she is ready. Maybe she's actually has more skills. So you can't just listen to the, you know, to the verbal, because there's gender differences there as well.
Absolutely. And we actually talk about that in a different podcast, how this plays on women, how the difficulties on putting out, you know, to get out of this habit of downplaying our skills and then obviously missing out on opportunities.
Look, and that's why we have European women on board. So I'd let one last pitch for European women on board, because the women in your audience can join, and men can join too, and join European women on boards as sponsors and supporters and male allies. So you can find more on europeanwomenonboards.eu.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I will put everything in the notes anyway, so that people can find out more about, they can find the link and find more about the European Women on Board. Thank you so much for your time. It's been fantastic. And
it's a pleasure. Thank you
as a guest for one of my events soon.
Okay, we'll do. Thank you very much, Julia. And thank you. It was a pleasure to have this nice conversation.
It was a great pleasure. You too.
I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, please support us by liking it, by subscribing to our channel, and by sharing with your friends. It might seem such a small thing, but actually it will help us a lot.
And...